This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Next up, hour number two. Here on Gwynn and Chris, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Sello, Matt Scraby. A little daily gambit after we just had our serious anti-gambling talk. We will bring it back for, you know, Scraby, you could have just told me to fix my camera, man. You didn't have to get up out of your seat, brother.
I'm just trying not to upset the show and just do it myself.
No, we don't need to do that.
Thank you.
You got some folks getting at you a little bit on the chat.
Yeah. Everybody wants to dance on the Niners' grave.
Come on over. There's plenty of room on the dance floor.
I also, from Dave on the chat, want to place a friendly wager, Matt Scraby. Go, Pack, go. My answer to you, Dave, is absolutely not. Why would I ever wager on a game where my starting quarterback is out and the best defensive player on the team is out? Nick Bosa. That just seems like a lose-lose-lose for me.
And it is.
Yeah.
And it is. It's not the time to be asking for bets.
I can't wait when we're talking about a 49er win on Monday. Five and everybody has to be quiet.
That'll make you guys, what, 6-6?
No, if they lose, they'll be 5-6, and then the next week they play at Buffalo. That's why I'm yelling 5-7.
Chris has been yelling 5-7 all week. There's also an interesting suggestion on the chat from, I think it's TM1, Danny Dimes in San Francisco if Brock Purdy's out long term.
I actually heard that this morning. I can't remember if it was Get Up or First Take.
Because the Giants have released him. If he clears waivers, he's a free agent.
He'll be a free agent. And I mean, I will say this. Your guy is pretty good when he gets a new toy in his toy
arsenal.
Chest. Yes, for sure. I don't know that Daniel Dimes is the guy, though. I mean, they're going from Brock Purdy to DD.
I'd rather go to Daniel Dimes than Brandon Allen.
Yeah, I don't think so. You really wouldn't, I don't think.
Brandon Allen, he's been in the system. There's some
he's
trust
been in the
there.
System. Yeah. He knows what they're doing. I mean, Daniel Jones, you'd have to scale back the playback book by like 90%.
I get that. I don't know why I'm such a big Daniel Jones believer, because he's done nothing but prove to me that I shouldn't believe in Daniel Jones. But I also think a lot of it has to do with the team that he's played for his entire career, which is the Giants. He's gone through coaches. He's gone through offensive coordinators. He's had a torn ACL. They pretty much got rid of Saquon Barkley last year. I mean, you take away one of the best running backs in the league, you put more pressure on Daniel Jones. What is he supposed to do?
Yeah, I don't know.
Go to San Francisco.
All right. Daily Gambit. All three of us got our bets in. Let's see how we fared.
Do you like money?
I think about money a lot.
Do you like money without doing anything?
Winning.
Do you want to make money while watching sports?
I think Washington is a mortal lock.
Washington! Woohoo!
If you answered yes, this is your segment. Just don't blame us when you lose.
Well, nothing is ever your fault.
It's your game. Take it.
Gwen and Chris go through the top bets of the day in The Daily Gambit on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, Daily Gambit is our daily sports betting segment here on Gwen and Chris. Please, everybody, gamble responsibly. We do mean it. Tony is entering the room right now. Greg Camarillo is in the house, and we will be talking to him next. But you can come on in, Greg. No problem. Have a seat. All right, we will. Everybody can come on in. Sorry, I'm talking to Greg, talking to everyone. Let's get into the bets, though, because first we had Steelers -3.5 against the Browns on the spread. Tony and I chose the Steelers. Chris chose the Browns, and as we know now, the Browns 24-19. So that one, we did not win. Chris did win. Okay, George Pickens, which bet would you make? Over 4.5 receptions or over 60.5 receiving yards. All of us said he would do both. He came short on both of them. 4 catches for 48 yards. So that didn't happen
either. Once I saw the snowflakes falling, I knew that any bet we had for George Pickens was probably not going to go well. Although, my guy, Les Ride, was on. He had a good game.
Until the end.
I mean, what? He had to fumble, but that was it.
That's a big fumble. We're going to ask Greg Camarillo about what it's like to play in a snow game because...
It looks horrible.
They're calling that the snow globe game now in Cleveland. Like,
all I know is the first half, it seemed reasonable, and then it was like someone turned on the
snow.
And
that was awesome. It was great.
I couldn't help but think how miserable.
Tony,
it was.
You're just too cold of an individual. I mean, you
got cold as in he can't handle 65.
Yes,
he can't, man. Yes. The guy wears a knit cap in June.
Fair enough.
Next bet: Georgia Tech -8.5 over North Carolina State. Georgia Tech, you guys chose Georgia Tech, I chose NC State. Georgia Tech won the game, but they only won by 130-29, so I get that one. Baylor basketball -2.5 against St. John's. You guys chose St. John's. I chose Baylor. Baylor did win, but they did not cover. 99-98 in double overtime.
That must have been some great game. I didn't watch it, but I bet it was pretty good.
Yeah, double OT. USF -1.5 over Memphis. You guys chose Memphis. I chose my Dons. Memphis wins 68-64.
Sorry.
Next one. Who had more rushing yards, Najee Harris or Nick Chubb +20? We all went Najee. Najee had 41. Nick Chubb had 59 +20. He had 79. So he wins that one. We all lose.
I got like one win on these bets.
Yeah,
so
these
far.
Are bad bets for all of us today. Jameis Winston, who had more passing yards, Jameis or Russell Wilson? Jameis Winston 219. Russell Wilson +50. So he threw for 270. Russell wins, and we win the bet on this one. He didn't need
the 50. I was 4-2, so you guys speak for yourselves.
I was 2-4, so that was
all right.
Brutal.
I felt good about my day yesterday. All right, here we go with a lot of great games coming up this weekend. We'll start with the NBA Cup continuing tonight.
Cup games.
Chicago Bulls have never won an NBA Cup game, Anthony.
Ever?
Ever.
Oh, wow.
They will be home to the Atlanta Hawks tonight. Hawks are favored by 1.5 points in Chicago, where I might add that the Bulls are 1-5 this year at home. Tony, why don't you go? You're the NBA guy.
Bulls 1-5 at home. And who they got again?
They got the Hawks coming in.
The Hawks.
The Hawks.
Hawks are favored by 1.5.
Give me the Bulls.
Doubles. The Bulls, at some point, have to win an NBA Cup game, maybe tonight.
Tonight is the night.
Tonight's the night. Scraby, who do you got? I'm taking the Bulls also. Scrape?
The Bulls have been playing better than I thought they would play this year up to this point, so I'm going to say Bulls. And the Bucks have been playing below to where I thought they would play.
Yeah, the Bucks beat the Bulls.
Wait, I thought we said the Hawks.
Oh,
yeah,
we did
playing
say
the Hawks.
Hawks
here.
Never mind.
I'm
like, wait a minute. If they're the Bucks,
he's giving a breakdown of the Bucks, and they're not even in the game.
Okay, I'm still going with the Bulls though, because the Hawks aren't very good.
You're supposed to gamble responsibly, Scraby.
I thought we were playing the Bucks for a second.
That is not responsible. All right, let's get into some of the college football tomorrow. You've got undefeated Indiana, but they're playing at Ohio State. It's a big one, obviously. Ohio State, here's the respect they have for Indiana. Ohio State is favored by 11 points.
Yeah.
I mean, they just don't expect Indiana to be able to run with these guys. If I'm Indiana, I'm using all of that motivation, man. We got to go out and show what we can do. I got to take Indiana just because I'm going to be rooting for them anyway. So, Indiana, plus 11. Scrape?
I'm going to go with Indiana, too, because I feel like they're doing things that are kind of like those destiny things.
Definitely are. They haven't won this many games ever, I don't think.
Yeah.
No, never.
This is going to be tough, but I'm going to say Indiana.
It's their first time with 10-0 ever, yes.
This,
Tony?
This feels like one of those games that is either going to be really close or Ohio State is going to blow them out of the water.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's the first, so I'm going to pick with my heart, not with my head.
Yes.
I'm going with the Hoosiers.
I think we're all taking Indiana with our heart, which is not a good way to bet.
There's no, none of us are picking that one with our brain there at all.
No, we're not. Colorado, the story in college football. Wrap up a spot in the Big 12 championship game. They're three-point favorites at Kansas. Kansas is coming off of an upset win over BYU. Scraby, you are first here.
Ooh.
Chance for you to pick against your nemesis, Coach Prime.
I can't pick against him. And by the way, he's coming out with shoes next year that are the shoes he wore with the 49ers. And immediately I was like, I need those shoes. But then I felt in my head, you
they're
guys
coming
were
out
say,
for us because they're already wearing them on the field, it looks like.
Okay. So, yeah. But they're coming out in February. And I thought, can I get those shoes and not have the guys make fun of me? And the answer is yes, I'm getting those shoes.
You
and
can
I
get
don't
the
even
shoes,
care if
but
you guys
we will
make
be
fun
making
of
fun of you.
That was my single best year of my life, was 1994 when Deion Sanders was on the 49ers. I loved it. I go with Colorado, though, because Kansas is bad.
Tony, what do you got?
Go Buffs.
All right, I'm going to do a surprise pick. I'll take Kansas here. I think Colorado's due for a loss. And I'm also rooting for Colorado to lose so that maybe there's an outside shot that could come to the Holiday Bowl. And I do think Kansas is capable of winning at home, so I'll take Kansas.
They already upset somebody this year in that conference.
They just upset BYU last week.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, one more, and actually a couple more in college football. Army is also undefeated. Army is 9-0 for like the first time since the 40s, since I was a kid. And
I just got that.
Just got that. Very good.
I didn't catch that either right away.
Yeah. Army's undefeated, but they're getting 14 points because they're playing at Notre Dame. Tony's first on this one. Notre Dame minus 14 over Army.
I'm going to take Army to cover.
Again, I'm picking with my heart only. But I want Army. I've seen enough of Notre Dame.
Me too.
I could care less if Notre Dame wins. I give me Army and I'll take a shot in the dark.
Notre Dame hasn't been good since Rudy went there.
They're a little more tolerable since Kelly left and went to LSU. Now LSU is not tolerable.
Now they're intolerable. Yeah.
I saw the funniest video. It said if Brian Kelly is hired by USC, and it was this guy doing the surfer talk, like Brian Kelly's going to come out and be like, "Wah!"
That's exactly what he would do.
Yeah,
Notre Dame is more tolerable. I like that, Tony. So we're all taking Army.
Yes.
All right, and Utah State is 5 over the Aztecs.
Oh, that game's at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
No, not the Aztec game.
No, the Notre Dame game.
Notre Dame Army's at Yankee Stadium. Okay. Utah State minus 5 against the Aztecs. They can't make a bowl game, but these are two really important games for Sean Lewis. He's got to win these two games to get a little confidence back heading into the offseason. So I say they come through. Scraby?
We did. You weren't here for this, Chris, but we did. CBS Sports ranked the worst 25 teams in college football right now.
Oh, boy.
San Diego State was 24th. Utah State was 25th, so I'm going to take San Diego State to cover, get the plus 5.
Oh, it's a top 25 matchup, but it's on the wrong end.
The wrong end.
Tony?
Yeah, I'll take the Aztecs. Come on, baby.
Yeah, of course. All right, on Sunday, I don't know, this has probably changed now. Green Bay was a 3-point favorite over San Francisco. I bring this up for a couple of reasons. But here's one of the reasons, Scraby. Do you realize this is the first time in 36 games, which is like almost two full seasons, that the four or more than two full seasons, that the 49ers have not been favored?
Yes, I did read that this morning.
They are not favored in this game. It's the first time since 2022.
I did read that this morning.
That's crazy. The all-time record was the Patriots back in the 2016-20. They were favored in 64 consecutive games.
Wow.
But
line is 5.5, by the way, for the Packers.
I was going to say, with Purdy out, 5.5. All right, Scraby, you're first. I'll give you 5.5 if you want it.
I'm going 49ers.
Showing faith.
Yes.
Tony?
He's not going 49ers. I can just see it in his soul.
He's trying to think
you
of
know
something
what?
Clever.
I'm going Green Bay.
I knew it.
I have a feeling that the 49ers are going to buck up here. They have to.
I hope they do.
Plus, whenever I pick them, they tend to lose, which is what I'm actually secretly hoping for.
He's going Green Bay, though.
No, I'm taking the 49ers.
Okay. All right.
And that's good.
All right.
That's good for the weekend.
Good.
Be good. All right.
All right, let's step away. Let's take a break. When we come back, our good friend Craig Camarillo.
Good friend, huh?
I got nervous because all his three girls are in here.
Yes.
And he's in here.
We Greg have an audience.
Greg Camarillo joins us next. We'll talk a little NFL football on the other side. More Gwen and Chris.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right. I know it may not have seemed like I knew Greg's name last before we went, but I do. His beautiful daughters are in here with us talking some NFL football. We haven't got to do this in a little bit, Greg.
Good to be back in here.
Come on, Scrape. Got to get the mics right, man.
And I'm not talking into the mic now. Jeez, what is this, my first day in radio? Go ahead, Greg.
Do I need to press
it?
There we go.
No, that's unbelievable. You think I'm the one that needs lessons. I mean, I don't get it.
Greg, NFL football season has been quite interesting. I mean, we could start last night. As you probably heard me saying on the way over here or while you were sitting next to me, all I could think about is how miserable that game looked.
It looked great.
All I was watching was for, like, after the play ended. Because the adrenaline's rolling when you're hitting guys, and as soon as the play ends, that tends to be where the time where you can kind of see, like, the realness of it all. And every time, there was at least one or two guys that looked like, I don't really want to do this anymore.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's probably half of the guys. So a little bit of snow is not bad. Like the first few flurries, you're like, this is cool. We're playing a snow game. And then you get wet, and that's where the difference happens. It's like the first few flurries, you're fine. You got a sleeve or you're not that wet. But then when you're wet and it's 30 degrees, it becomes miserable.
It's funny you said that because the guy I watched the most was Patrick McQueen because he was flying around early. And in the second half when the snow was like on the ground, the way he was like trying to catch himself when he had to tackle somebody so that the rest of his body wasn't getting wet, it was kind of fun to watch him the rest of the game.
Try to land on top of someone, try to stay up, hold somebody up until the ref blows the whistle. We saw the kicker drying his shoes off there.
He had
on the
to
side.
Change shoes at
yeah,
one point.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a scene right there. A kicker with his foot in front of the heater.
notice where the holder and the kicker were that whole time. That heat blower that was going out, they were all in line with it.
I mean, that's the greatest thing. They have these heated benches, too, so you can get on there, get your feet in there, get your helmet on there. hang out by the heater. You know, it's a good place to be.
Sounds like it.
Greg, you ahead, know, Chris. Real quick on the snow thing, I just want to ask Greg, as a Dolphin guy, and knowing Greg was, you know, one of my all-time favorite Dolphins, of course, how many games did the Dolphins truly lose over the years because it was just too darn cold for them? I mean, really a factor that they play all year in warm weather and in December have to go into this cold stuff?
Absolutely a factor. And it's just getting used to it. It's the benefit the other way. So the Dolphins have the benefit in August when it's hot and humid and absolutely miserable, and cool teams come down and play and they die. We played the Raiders, put them in black uniforms, and they just like
that.
It's miserable, but it goes the opposite way. You're in Miami in December, it's 82 degrees, it's glorious, and you don't have to deal with wet gloves, wet sleeves, cold feet, and then suddenly you go into a cold environment like Buffalo, and it's windy, and it's cold, and you're miserable, and you can't wait till you get back in the shower after the game. So it's absolutely a huge effect. And when I was traded from Miami to Minnesota, then I got the other side of that. I learned how to, you know, 32 degrees in December is a glorious day.
They weren't in that nice, cozy stadium they had. Or at this point, you guys were playing outside that year, right?
Well, kind of both. We played the year the dome collapsed. Over a snowstorm.
So you guys were playing at University of Minnesota,
and then we
right?
Played outside.
I remember one of those games. They were talking about, like, you know, I assume typically in NFL stadiums there's some type of heat under the ground.
Yep.
University of Minnesota did not have that.
Rock solid.
And so you guys were hitting basically concrete when they were tackling you guys.
That's how Brett Favre's career ended. He hit the rock hard ground and got a concussion, and then that was a wrap for him.
Did you play in that Seattle playoff game that was like -4 degrees? Where the guy missed the field goal for Minnesota on the last play of the game?
I did not. No, the coldest I've ever been is probably like the 20s or 30s. I was on IR with Miami when they went to Kansas City. I think it was -16. And I was just cold watching it. It looked absolutely miserable. But they got the dub. So, you know, it worked out all right.
I remember you telling me a story, Greg, about when you were returning a punt in Pittsburgh. And it was on Monday Night Football. And it rained so much. And the field was horrible. But there was so much water on the field that the punt just stuck in the ground.
Yeah.
And didn't, like, bounce back up to you or anything like that.
Like a golf shot. And so now what just brought that up is they're playing the high school playoff games in Snapdragon. We know Snapdragon has had their issues of grass problems. And so imagine this bomb cyclone that's going on in Portland or Seattle, wherever. It comes to San Diego. It pours rain. They play high school games. I think it must have been Friday.
Yep.
They play the University of Pittsburgh game Saturday. And the field was a disaster. So what they did is they said, let's put out some new turf. But instead of taking out the old turf, they put the new turf on top of the old turf. So like your foot would sink probably 4 or 5 inches every time you took a step. And then the punt just stuck right in the ground. And it comes up every 3, 4, 5 years. And there I am on a...
And another Dolphin loss on the road in miserable conditions, if I recall correctly.
Hey, wait. I thought he was one of your favorite Dolphins, Chris.
He's my favorite. The team is what, you know, drives him crazy.
All right. Yeah. A couple of storylines, at least today. The New York Giants seemingly are having a tough time handling their business.
Yes.
And this goes back to the offseason where we got to see on live TV, or it wasn't live TV, but we got to see on TV them basically letting Saquon Barkley go test the market. And I found it to be funny at the time that the GM seemed to be like proud of himself as that whole thing was going down. We fast forward to now. Saquon's running crazy in Philadelphia. They're not too long ago, first round pick, Daniel Dimes Jones has been benched and then released all within 24 hours. This organization seems like a mess.
Yeah,
right
well,
now.
Both New York organizations are a mess right now.
I got another question about the other one later.
So let's stick with the positive on this one. They're doing a nice deed. They don't have to cut him. They could wait till the end of the year, cut him, and then spread out his salary cap impact for the future. They're being nice because they still have to pay his salary. And they're saying, you know what, Danny, go ahead. Go try to find yourself a new spot where you can actually play. So they're doing him a solid by letting him go, and hopefully he can land on a team where they need a quarterback. Eyes on like the Carolina Panthers, where they need a quarterback. The Cowboys, they need a quarterback. There's lots of teams where he could actually get a shot to go out there and make an impact. So they're being nice after they made this big mistake of signing my guy for 4 years, $160 million bucks.
Yes. On the other side, New York Jets, they seem to be in equally bad footing.
Only this time, it's probably as much of about the owner as it is the team. And so I bring you two owners that are heavily involved in their organizations. Woody Johnson of the Jets and our guy, Mr. Jones for
Jerry
Jones for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Is this not a great example of owners being far too involved with the actual football?
Yes, part? It's a beautiful example of that. These are business people. They are, and some of them are just billionaires that just happen to fall right, into $1 billion.
Right.
Which, and I'm all good. Go buy a team. Have a blast. You know, but those aren't people that know football. And as we could see, but you got to know football to make good decisions. And that doesn't mean you have to play football, but you got to know the football. And so that's why you hire a GM that's experienced. That's why you hire a head coach that's experienced. So you can make all these decisions as a group. When you got one guy up top saying, this is my way or the highway, you're going to end up in these situations. And it's not the same for everyone, but we got two great examples this year of owners that just need to kind of take a step back and open their ears to some other voices.
Greg, take us through what that poor ownership does to a locker room.
Yeah.
And how the trickle-down effect. I mean, I would imagine most players, other than a quick handshake or maybe the day they, you know, sign their contract, never really even see the owner. I still imagine that owners' actions trickled all the way down. You guys know what's going on. And when it's a mess, you know it's a mess.
Yep. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So they say the S-word flows downhill. If it starts at the top and it's flowing all the way down. But it's really about the demeanor of the team. If you have an owner that you know supports you, supports your coaches, let your coaches make decisions, let your GM make decisions, and it gives that autonomy all the way down, it feels better. And it's the same as any workplace.
Yeah.
You know, Chris, when Scraby was comfortable enough texting your boss asking for a day off for you so you could attend a Thursday night football game, like, that's a great situation. You know, he feels comfortable. He's going to work harder. It's the same thing. Corporate America, it is in football. When you got an owner that's bought in, that gives people the freedom to make the right choices, to do the best for the team, to support the team, things are going to go well. Things just feel better. You're happier to work harder.
It just feels like at least that's like half. That's one thing you don't have to worry about as a team. If you got that support, you're the coaching staff's allowed to make decisions freely. Seems like that's just one of the things you check off in a very difficult, you know, uphill battle to try to win a Super Bowl. So it makes a lot of sense. The other thing that's kind of been talked about here, especially the last few weeks, is the Colorado Buffaloes have continued to win games.
Yeah.
Is Deion Sanders chasing, or I shouldn't say, following his son to wherever he goes. Now, Deion, for his credit, has said no every single time he's been asked about it. My question is, what do you think that dynamic would be like in a locker room? Because I don't know that there's ever been player, father, coach, quarterback. I would imagine there's some complications to something like that.
I would love to see it. And I'll come right back to that. But it's like LeBron and Bronny. Is that good for basketball on the court? No.
Right.
But is it fun as a fan to watch a father and his son play together like that? That's amazing. It's just a cool story. So I would love to see somebody like Deion coach his son. It's working now. And the one thing that I think could make that work is Deion doesn't sugarcoat anything.
He doesn't.
If
not
his
even
son's
for
playing
his son.
Well, he'll tell everybody. Right. If his son's playing bad, he will tell everybody.
Yeah, for sure.
And so that's what would make it work, because that honesty is there. And you know that if Shador's not playing well, the whole rest of the locker room sees it. As long as the head coach, dad, is keeping it real, it could work out.
Okay.
Are we going to go to a break, or are we going to...
I got to turn on my mic, guys. I'm hitting all the buttons that are wrong right now. We're going to keep going for a couple more minutes, Chris.
All right, well, then I'll throw another couple of questions out there. Greg, as far as the Chiefs, as far as the Ravens, as far as the Steelers, although I think they might have fell back a little yesterday.
Buffalo.
Talk mostly about Buffalo.
Right.
This is a team that every year, first of all, I hate them because they always beat the Dolphins. So that's, you know. Get that out of the way. But, you know, Buffalo is always the team that doesn't get it done. They don't make this, you know, they can't get through the playoffs.
Yeah.
They never beat Kansas City when it matters. They lose to Baltimore when it matters. Do you have any funny feeling like I do that maybe it'll just finally be their turn? Is that possible that this team is just put together better without some of the bigger names who left last year?
Yeah, the one thing that makes me optimistic about the Buffalo Bills is Josh Allen. And he is just playing with reckless abandonment. Like, Rich Orenberg, who I do a TV show with on Sunday nights, loves to call him the Moose. The Moose is on the loose because that's how he runs.
He does run like a moose.
He's big, he's strong, he's powerful, he's fast, and he's not afraid to take some hits. Is that a great thing for the long term? Probably not, but it's a lot of fun to watch. And when it comes to playoff football and we start seeing more games like Thursday night where it's in Buffalo and it's cold and it's snowing and it's windy and somebody's got to run and go get it, Josh Allen can run and go get it. But all that being said, people are lowering the expectations of the Chiefs now they lost one game. It's literally one game, and they don't even have to turn it on until the playoffs. Are we worried about Travis Kelce? Not one bit.
No.
He'll be fine come the playoffs. So, Chris, so you guys were doing the sports betting, and I'm a terrible sports bettor.
We all are.
20 years, I bet against Tom Brady. This is the year that he's not going to do it. I feel the same way about the Mahomes. Kansas City Chiefs. Like, this is the year they're not going to do it. But then, of course, that's the stupid way to do it. Until someone beats them, they're the best.
Yeah. It's becoming more difficult to kind of not see it that way. All right, last one for me. Detroit Lions.
Yeah.
They perhaps are the best team in all of football.
Yeah.
Do you think it's real? I mean, based on how it ended last year. Now, this year, the way it's set up right now, 49ers may not even get to that point.
Yeah.
And Detroit is going to be at home. They're not going to be on the road.
Yeah.
There's still a piece of me that says this is Detroit Lions, though.
You know, I feel the same way. And it's, so they keep talking about this is the best Detroit team since 1964. They've got more passing yards than 1933. And that's because it's the Detroit Lions. Like, right. They've never been good.
They don't have the kind of history.
Records that are terrible. And then when Dan Campbell came in as coach, we were together briefly in Miami. A nice guy. But he came in talk about we're biting kneecaps. I saw videos of them doing up-downs. I was like, this is a disaster. It's never going to work. And credit to him, it's the total opposite.
He's out there doing burpees during practice.
It looks amazing. Jared Goff is on fire.
Yeah.
Am I fully convinced that it'll roll all the way through the playoffs? I am not.
Yeah.
But you got to give them credit because they have totally turned things around. The city of Detroit loves them. They're fun to watch. It's good to see Jared Goff's career turn around.
Yeah.
But I'd be worried that when they come up against some of those juggernauts that less experienced team may not prevail.
I think the best part about this year's NFL season so far is that it seems to be a bunch of teams like that where, you know, it's like once you get in the playoffs, then we'll start wait for you to prove it. Baltimore is like that. Detroit's like that. Buffalo's like that. Everybody except the Chiefs are pretty much like that this year. So it has set up, it's seemingly set up to be a fun finish. Greg, appreciate you coming in, spending some time with us. Thank you, girls, for coming in with your pops, allowing them to spend some time with us. We'll get to break. We'll catch up on the other side.
Appreciate you, fellas.
If you love Mediterranean food, try Spiro's for authentic Mediterranean cuisine in Coronado or La Jolla. For dining or takeout options, visit spirocuisine.com. NBA Cup Day is always on a Friday. Although my Lakers lost a stupid one last night to the Orlando Magic. Anthony Davis couldn't knock down a couple free throws, and it ended up costing us. As one of the Wagners hit a three.
I tell you, I don't know who those Wagner guys are, but they're pretty good. I mean, I hate to give them credit to the other side, but the guy on
Mo
the,
Wagner was a Laker. Lakers drafted him out of Michigan.
I think it was the other Wagner that was doing a lot of damage when I was watching.
He was the one that put the dagger in our chest yesterday as the Orlando Magic walked away with a victory on L.A.'s home court. They were not in action for today's Cup Day, but nonetheless, a tough loss for the Lakers yesterday.
Sorry to hear that.
Before we get into some more NBA conversation, let's check a little traffic.
All right, I was going to pick this up, Tony. There was a on NBA Live, I think is the show, ESPN, Kendrick Perkins has become a very popular guy on that show. Honestly, I think he might be a better talk show host than he was an NBA player. He had some good moments in the NBA, playing on some good teams. But he, yesterday, laid on us as his viewers his list of the five most dominant players in NBA history. Now, what I want to share the list with you because it's absolutely amazing to me what he came up with. And I want you guys, without saying names, but I just want you to put in your head some of your thoughts on who you would think are the most dominant players in NBA history. Now, I don't know that dominant means best, but it's got to at least be something like best. But I guess somebody who can take over a game like nobody else in the history of the game. So you think of some guys, and then we'll see if they wind up on the list or where they wind up on the list.
I got one immediately.
I got a couple.
Horace Grant, right. If Michael Jordan let him eat on a plane.
Horace Grant. All right, so here's Kendrick Perkins' list of the five most dominant players in NBA history. Number five, Steph Curry. Now, I can buy Steph Curry as one of the great players. He's obviously one of the great shooters. He can take over a game if he's hitting. I'm not anti that pick, but I'm a little anti it compared to some of the players that are not on the list. Number four, Michael Jordan. Now, I guess I'm a homer, or am I? But any list that talks about the greatest players in basketball or most dominant that doesn't even have Michael Jordan in the top three, I think has to be questioned a little bit.
Are we distinguishing between best and dominant is my question.
That's right. I don't think I am. I think he is. I want you to hear who he has ahead of Michael Jordan.
Okay.
Before you...
I know who one of them is going to be.
Determine where, you know, Jordan should be. Number three on his list, LeBron James. Dominant, belongs in the conversation. Number two, threw me off, Giannis Antetokounmpo. One of the most dominant players in NBA history, ahead of LeBron, ahead of Jordan. And I was, at this point, a little bit perplexed. But I thought, at least, he's going to save himself at number one. And he's going to put the guy that scored over 50 points a game for a season. The guy that scored 100 points in a game. The guy that has scored 70 points 20 times. Averaged 50 and 30 for a season. I mean, Will Chamberlain is the most dominant player in the history. And he had to save him for number one because he hasn't put him yet in the list. His number one, Shaquille O'Neal.
I think that makes sense, honestly.
I love Shaq. I love all the guys on his list. I don't like who he left off. I don't see how you can have dominant without Wilt. I don't see how you can have dominant without Kobe Bryant, who takes over every game he ever played. And obviously, I think Jordan's probably too low just because Jordan's Jordan. Your thoughts, Mr. NBA expert, Tony Gwynn.
NBA expert, that's strong.
Yes, I'm giving you the lofty status here.
I understand Perk's top five. Although, okay. I probably would have left Steph out of it. Because although I don't necessarily think it's about taking over, it's just how you played, like the type of force you played with, right? I mean, I can see Shaq being at number one. I can't see Wilt being left off of the list. You know, I get it. Wilt was playing against a lot of people that were, you know, 6'7", 6'8".
That's my argument.
But nonetheless, I mean, dominant is dominant. Was he not dominating the 6'7 guys, 6'7", 6'8 guys? He's still dominating them. I mean, he didn't get to hand pick his opponents and pick out the tallest dudes. Whoever they had on the squad, he was playing, and he was, by definition, dominating. So I don't think you could leave Wilt off of that list. Michael deserves to be on the list. I mean, you can only replace one of those guys. I don't disagree with Giannis. I don't disagree with Shaq. Who do you have at three?
LeBron.
It's hard to leave him off the list. Steph is the only one. And listen, Kobe, as you said, deserves a nod. But the only one that I would replace would be Steph Curry, and I would replace him with Wilt, and I would reshuffle that. I would probably have Shaq 1, Wilt 2. You probably make the argument Wilt 1, Shaq 2. But those two, based on the way they dominated their era, have to be 1, 2. Giannis is probably like 5 on my list. And then Michael's 3rd. Who was the other one in there missing?
LeBron.
And LeBron's probably 4th.
Well, here's my, you know,
I just think that the dominant part
was an incredible force of nature, and I think Scravey's point, it would be, you know, something you have to think about. Shaq was dominating against other guys that were 7 foot
right,
two.
Right.
I mean, he was bigger than them. But I ask you this, but there's no way to know. Who would have scored more, Shaq versus Wilt or Wilt versus Shaq? It's a little unfair because we've seen all the highlights of Shaq. All we've ever seen is Wilt of him just going up over 7 foot guys and dunking the basketball. But I don't know. I mean, Shaq is almost nearly impossible to stop.
Yes. Shaq would have been an alien if he was back in Wilt Chamberlain's days.
He really would have been. Because, listen, I think what we tend to forget is that the new era is the old era, but has the same of the same some of the same things as the old, but more refined. And that's all Shaq was compared to Wilt. Yeah, Wilt was backing cats down and kind of no-look dunking over on him as he was backing him down. Shaq just, he didn't care. Like, and as you said, he was doing it against guys his size. He was putting them in the rim with the ball a lot of times. I watched him almost, I can't remember whose wrist it was. Someone was bold enough to try to block his two-handed dunk and literally almost got their wrist broke into the basket.
Wilt Chamberlain never collapsed an entire standard.
Two of them.
Which Shaq did more than one occasion.
They had to build new rims with different safety things because he was destroying them all.
Yes,
so,
he was.
So, yeah, I think Shaq, for me, I'm fine with that being one. But Wilt, I think you're right. Wilt can't be left off of that list. I don't care if he was playing against dudes who were shorter. And you just can't put him in. I don't think you can put him there over Steph Curry. Steph Curry over him.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, it caught my eye immediately when I saw Jordan fourth, because everybody thinks if you're talking dominant, great, Jordan's always number one. And I think it's fair that he's not always number one.
Yeah.
He wasn't the greatest at every single thing. He was the greatest at most of it. But when you talk about being a force of nature, Jordan wasn't physically a force of nature like those other guys.
I think that's the one thing that I think everybody loves about Michael. When he talks about this subject, he doesn't forget the likes of a Wilt Chamberlain or those guys that came before him, which is why he doesn't really delve into this conversation of who's better.
Yeah,
he finds it disrespectful to the guys who played before.
Convenient excuse, Mr. Jordan.
I mean,
look, Jordan has always known how to please everybody. As he said one time famously, Republicans buy Nikes also.
That's right. He did say that.
He's always been able to do that.
Now, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, I think it's kind of something. It's always fun to kick that stuff around. And I just, when I saw the list, I thought I had to bring it up to you guys. So,
that's a good conversation for sure. I think, because of Twitter, like, this debate happens probably more often than we need it to happen. Like, it used to just be occasionally, but on Twitter,
it's
like 24-hour debate time on Twitter. So,
I'm not over the who's more, it's the, you know, who's the GOAT.
I'm glad you said it. Chris, you know what really is starting to bother me is the whole notion behind my GOAT. That's not the definition
of it. No, there's actually one GOAT.
There is the greatest of all time, not my greatest of all time. That's just your favorite player.
Exactly.
That's not the same thing as GOAT.
Yes.
I hate that. That's a cop-out to me.
My
GOAT is Paul George. No, that's your favorite player.
That's dumb.
We used to all be able to kind of have some, what is the word I'm looking for? We used to be able to tell things like truthfully and like have even if it was your favorite guy, you still could tell the truth and be like, all right, he may not be the best guy.
I do that all the time.
How about University of Connecticut the other night bringing an actual GOAT out onto the floor?
That was a little much, but it was kind of funny at the same time.
That's funny. I like the way that his girls on that team, the women on that team, joke with Gino. They seem to be able to poke fun at him as well for such a guy who's such a hard-nosed coach like that.
On the chat real quick, Addicted to Fishing says his five are Stockton, Jordan, Russell, Jabbar, and Chamberlain.
Chamberlain?
Bill Russell?
Jabbar, for sure. Can't get with John Stockton. I don't know how he was the dominant. He was one of the
He's
greatest.
He's the best assist guy in history.
He sure is. I don't know that it's dominant.
All right.
But, you know, that's the beauty of these things. You get to get your own. You get my list versus
the list. Tony's list. All right. Chris is going to head to Essex Women's. We're going to play Tony
Good
versus
luck,
the fans
Chris.
When we get back on 97.3 The Fan.